I'd like you to turn to John chapter 10, and in verse 10, we have the foundational verse for our Christian walks. This is the premise of what we build everything we do upon. In John chapter 10, verse 10, we read, "The thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly." Now, we also use the living triumphantly in Christ verse out of Corinthians. But this is a phenomenal verse for our Christian walks. And you should be thinking of this verse. You should be thinking of this concept all the time. And if you're not living the more than abundant life, then your Goliath is keeping you from it. That's how you know if you've got a Goliath or not. Are you living the more than abundant life? And that means, quite simply, is your life spiritually enriched? Is it absolutely great? Are you tuned in to God? Do you use the name of Jesus Christ? Do you understand who you are in Christ? Do you claim your rights as the Son of God and hold on to Him? You see, walking the Christian walk is kind of like going down a real fast river in a raft or a nice boat, whatever it is. But it's a real fast river. And sometimes you're alone and sometimes you got other people on that raft, but it's pretty fast and you got to really hold on sometimes. And so if you've got this concept down that you've got to be doing things in your life, in your Christian walk, so that you can lay claim to it, lay hold upon it, you've got a pretty good handle on what you've got in front of you. Okay? If you're not living the more than abundant life in all of its fullness, and I do mean that, you've got a Goliath. And so we need to focus at times on beating that Goliath back down if he pops up. Nothing wrong with that. And God gave us the account of David and Goliath in the Old Testament. I'd like us to go there, 1 Samuel, and that's chapter 17. What I'm going to do is draw some parallels with Christianity and this Old Testament account. Now, if you're going to draw parallels, you got to be careful, just to let you know. You don't go saying that Christianity is alive in the Old Testament. You got to be careful about that one. But if it doesn't contradict what's in the New Testament, you're good to go. So if you're making teachings and figuring that kind of stuff out, keep that in mind. I want you to be able to beat down your Goliath, the small and the short of it. If your life is not enriched, if you're not happy and blessed, if you're not receiving the abundance that God wants to provide, if you're not emotionally fit, let's call it, maybe anger rages in your life or some other emotion and you just can't seem to beat that dog down. You need to learn how to beat down your Goliath. And I want you to understand that God's expectations for you are to be happy, full of joy, full of kindness, love. In fact, I was almost going to teach this today, but I said, nope, but I want to. God has given Christians the behavioral code of conduct in 1 Corinthians 13, the agape lifestyle. I believe that the agape lifestyle goes hand in hand with beating down your Goliath. In fact, your Goliath is going to come out of the nemesis of one of those characteristics. In other words, if the code says put anger far away from you, then your Goliath could be that you have anger real close. If the code says don't be puffed up in your mind, then the opposite of that would be you're puffed up. That's your Goliath. Now, if you can't find your Goliath like that, you need to come and talk to me. Because it's going to be contrary to one of the codes of conduct for a Christian. The Christian code of conduct is the agape lifestyle. But I can't teach about that right now. But I can teach about this. And starting with verse 4, we learn about the forward attack. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, a cubit is this long, basically from your elbow to the tip of your fingers. And a span is the width of your fingers. Okay, so he was 9 feet and about the width of your fingers spanned. He's tall. He was getting ready to knock on 10 foot. Okay, how tall is this ceiling, Joe? This is only 8 feet. So go ahead and add another 9 foot to it, and then about the span of your fingers. So he was up there in the second story already. That's how tall Goliath was, and he was a Philistine. And he went out as a champion from the Philistines' camp. Now, the Philistines' guys were the enemies. Well, I'd like to say, and I'm jumping to the quick here in this teaching, so I'm just getting right to points. In other words, your Goliath may look too tall for you to do anything about. Okay? Verse 5, and he had an helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. You know what that mail is. It's that chain-looking, small chain link-looking stuff they wear, the guys at the Knights of the Round Table, and or at wherever you go down there, south of Dallas, Scarborough Fair in the medieval times and whatever. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. Look. Quite honestly, I don't care how big a shekel is, but when you put 5,000 of them in a bucket, you got some serious weight, okay? And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, coverings of brass, and a target of brass between his shoulders. He may be covered in what seems impenetrable armor. Your Goliath. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And one bearing a shield went before him. Wow. A weaver's beam, that's just a huge, huge log that was hewn out that a weaver used when he moved the looms that made the rugs and stuff, okay? Huge. That was just the staff of his spear. And then the spear's head, on top of that, weighed 600 shekels of iron. Now, I don't care how big a shekel is, but I do know that these shekels were made out of iron. And if you take 600 of them and throw them in a bucket, you're not lifting it. Okay? You're not lifting it. That's heavy. Well, his weapons may appear far too powerful for you to strike down, your Goliath. Because it comes at you. It's always coming at you and saying, come with me, come with me. And you're always walking after it if it's got you. Okay? So there's two things. It's coming at you, but you're also going after it. And only half the play is stopping it coming at you. The other part is you stop going to it. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Well, duh, we don't want you. But he was saying that to the Israelite armies. Now, the Israelite armies were the good guys. Am not I a Philistine and ye servants to Saul? Why, we Philistines are better than you. Choose you a man for you and let him come down to me. His voice may contain the roar of a lion, making you feel frozen in your tracks. And there's times when your Goliath does that. You just stand there frozen and you just let him tie your hands and put a blindfold over your eyes and lead you back off into that Goliath land. Okay? You may feel frozen in your tracks because of his roar. The roar is what causes you to get frozen. You know that from the epistles, the New Testament. And you know what to get frozen is. Every one of you know what it means to get frozen. It's when that thing comes over you and then you feel like you don't have any control. Well, that's a lie. Because you do have control. And you got to take control. That means you got to be willing to swim up out of it. It's almost like being down under the ocean. You see the surface up there? And it's about time to get a breath. Now you got to swim. If you're going to break surface and get your air, you got to move it. And you got to move it if you're going to get out of that frozen state. Verse 9. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me. So that was the setup. Those were the conditions. Not only to fight, but he's got to kill me. So this guy was technically putting his life on the line. Although he and the army over there believe that that would never happen. Then will we be your servants. Your Goliath thinks that it will never lose. And I'd like to tell you that your Goliath has life in it. And I'd also like to tell you that every time you go back to it, it's like mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. You're breathing life into it. Now, this is a concept you really got to understand. And I doubt you've ever heard this one before, but I'm just going to tell you. If you are allowing your Goliath to talk to you, number one, and then you are responding in some form or fashion, number two, you are literally breathing life into it. Literally. It's like mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. You are literally putting life into something that should be suffocated. You have to see it like this. It's an entity. It's a thing. Okay? Pretend that it's a thing. Make it have a picture. It's an entity. If you really want to complicate the matter, after you have breathed life into it, speak some words. Once you speak words, which takes both breath and sound, you have actually recreated your Goliath. And so every time that you speak words related to your Goliath, you are recreating it. When God said, let there be light, he spoke words. Now, God doesn't have breath, but he can create breath, and he did that. He put breath into man. And when we speak in tongues, we breathe as of a heavy breathing. We breathe in. We were instructed by Jesus to breathe in. Of course, you have to breathe out. And so this whole process, including the speaking, is actually a creation process. And most people don't even think like this, I guess, but I'm just throwing this out at you. If you take the time to speak, you're both breathing and making sound, and so you're actually initiating a sort of creation process. And every time you do that with your Goliath, you recreate it. You give it strength, you bring it to life, or you give it more life, and it can do its havoc on you. You got to see it like this, folks. This is a big deal. And this is why your words can be blessings or cursings. This is why you can say unto that mountain, be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea. And if you shall not doubt in your heart, but shall believe that whatsoever things you say shall come to pass, you shall have whatsoever things you say. This is a creation process that God established and He gave to you. And if you can master this, you can lift yourself into the more than abundant life. That's how you do it. You speak it into being by believing and speaking. And then you breathe life into it as you say it out loud. Well, don't use that on the Goliath. Oh my gosh! Let's get real here. Don't you feed your enemy. Suffocate your enemy. You feed the good thing. You feed your friends. That's how it works. That we may fight together, it says in verse 10. You're going to have to fight sometimes. Everybody raise your hand if you want to fight your enemy. You got to be able to do it, folks. Last time I talked about wrestling the problem down. You're going to have to do it, whether you like it or not. But who wouldn't want to do it? Only people that would want to sit around and be hurt. Oh, do you have a problem with sitting around and wanting to be hurt? Well, I'd like to say that you have walked across the threshold of devastation. And the one thing in my mind, above anything else, that devastates the human soul is abuse. Abuse is always at the root of pain and suffering. Always. I'm absolutely convinced of it. When and where you have pain, you've been abused. I'm not talking about sickness, although that's abuse too in a way. I'm talking about emotional abuse or spiritual abuse or even physical abuse. And I'm not talking about just when you were a little kid and from your parents or that ugly old uncle or whoever. I'm talking about anytime, anywhere, with anyone. And I want to tell you something, folks. If you are being abused, I want you to stand up to it. Maybe your Goliath is the abuser from the past. I don't know. You know. If you are being abused at work, I want you to bring a stop to it. If you are being abused by your friends, I want you to bring a stop to it. If you are being abused by your family, I want you to bring a stop to it. If you're being abused by anyone, I want you to bring a stop to it. And I want you to do it in a black and white fashion. I want you to turn around to the abuser and say, you are abusing me. You stop it now. It's at the root of all human pain and suffering. I want you to understand that. And I'm telling you, more than likely, your Goliath has something to do with that. I want you to be pain-free as much as it is possible. Spiritually, it's perfectly possible. Mentally, I'd say about 99% possible. You got stuff hanging on from the past. Some of it might just stay there. I don't know. But I'm telling you, I want you to basically be pain-free. I want you to be a happy, super abundant, thriving Christian. That's what I want. that lives according to the code of conduct. That's what I want. That's what I want you to want. Okay? And I believe that we're learning that here. So we know now from what we've read that the deals even that your Goliath, and I'm running parallels, that your Goliath attempts to strike at you may fill you with despair because you're so into Goliath land. Well, do you have a Goliath such as this one? One that looks too tall to climb over? Too well covered in armor that you could never get through? Too well armed that your weapons pale into insignificance? Too loud and forceful that you stand staring, frozen, and so uncompromising that your wits fall from your mind? Well, we're going to do something about that. That's the frontal attack. He just comes right up to you. Then we have the side attack. Have you ever taken your needs to others, seeking some sort of help, only to hear rhetoric and disdain? Well, Jesse, David's dad, had David take food to his sons and also to check on those boys. In verse 17, and 1 Samuel 17, verse 17, and Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn, that's just a measure of it of some sort, and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000. Man, there's a lot of people there. And look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Well, okay. But his brother, one of them, didn't like this little arrangement. In verse 22, and David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. So he just repeated his rhetoric. And now David was there, because he ran right into the middle of the Israeli army. Thousands and thousands of these guys. He found them real quick, it looks like. And then Goliath came up. The nation's Goliath. Do you know that your Goliath might seem just individual? And it is, perhaps, just for you. But you're not the only one that can have Goliaths. Every system and people on the face of this earth has a Goliath. And this is a great example of how an entire nation has a Goliath. America has a Goliath. We're dealing with things that have odds that seem insurmountable today, with the terrorists and the wars and stuff. But I'm telling you, God's protecting us. Don't you look at the sense knowledge stuff. Everything like this has a Goliath. And they have to be dealt with. So somebody's got to rise up to do it. Interestingly, with your individual Goliath, you're the one that has to rise up. Okay? And all the men of Israel, verse 24, when they saw the men, fled from him, and they were sore afraid. Well, have your problems ever seemed so terrible that anyone you ever went to for help ran away? Nobody could help you. Nobody wanted to help you. You needed help, but they wouldn't do it. They ran away because it just seemed so bad. Or they were just so scared. Verse 25, and the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. Oh, isn't that religious? And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. Whoa, that looks pretty good, doesn't it? gosh, all I have to do is cross that canyon. All I have to do is swim across the ocean. All I have to do is kill a giant. Interesting, huh? On the other side, wealth, riches, honor, a wife. Wow, that looks good sense-wise, doesn't it? This kind of reward usually brings out the pretenders. People who can do some good for some of the time, but no consistent good for all the time. And David spake, verse 26, to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth the Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? Thought we just learned that. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? I love how this is developing. If it doesn't come up directly in your heart, this is how you deal with your Goliath. You're learning how David did, and God had this recorded so you could learn. If it doesn't come up directly, so you could learn how God's working, how God works in a man. You want to know what it sounds like when God talks to you? Here's how you learn. You don't go make it up. You don't sit around in a closet wishing. You got to move and groove with the word. And you got to have the willingness to learn the word. So here we learn, if it doesn't come up directly in your heart, you probably aren't the person for the job. Okay? Pay attention to what God is working within you and be ready at a moment's notice to act upon it. But David was. All he was doing was bringing bread and cheese, man. Well, he got to see the giant. And then in verse 27, and the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. I'd like to say, don't be afraid of listening to people in the know. I mean, these guys knew what was going on. It's okay to ask. It's okay to find out what you need to know by your five senses, right? And you need to know stuff. So don't be afraid of listening to people in the know. They can share valuable insight. Although, don't you dare forget this one. Nothing can take the place of what God tells you. Absolutely nothing. So it's okay to get information, but it's not okay to 100% trust in that information. What is okay is to trust in God. So God's always got to be there in the picture. Verse 28, well, we have a problem. Okay? And this problem deals with what I'm calling the side attack. You know, attacks coming from the side. Goliath already came up to do the frontal attack. You know what a frontal attack is, don't you? Comes at you from the front. Then a side attack is when they come from the side. And then a rear attack is when it comes from the rear. Yeah. In fact, the Bible calls that re-reward. Re-reward. Two re's. Re-reward. And whenever you see the words re-reward in the Bible, it's talking about an attack from the rear. Verse 28, and Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. Eliab standing there is David's oldest brother, and he heard when David, the little guy with the cheese and bread, the one that wasn't allowed to be in the army because he's too young, too small, and all that, he heard him when he spake unto these other men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. Do you know what it means to kindle? Get it going. You kindle it. You get your kindling, you start the fire, and you're getting the fire going. Pretty soon you got big logs on it. Kindle is just the first part. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, now we got logs on the fire of Eliab's anger. Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. I know why you came. You didn't come to bring food. You came down to see the battle. I know your pride and how bad you are inside. It's like, golly. You know, anger like this destroys a man, and it will destroy you if you either have it or listen to it. Two sides of the coin here. If you've got this kind of anger, you've got a pretty big Goliath, and I'm sorry for you. But if you live according to the Christian code of conduct, 1 Corinthians 13, the rules of engagement, agape, you'll be able to take that anger down because you know you're supposed to, and then you just do it. Do it. Okay? That's one side of the coin. The other side of the old anger coin that we're flipping, that side is listening to it. If you stand there and listen to somebody's anger, the bad anger like this, you are being abused. And I already told you how to handle abuse, and I expect you to do that. I expect you to do it at school. I expect you to do it with your friends. I expect you to do it anywhere and everywhere it comes up. You turn around and you say, you're abusing me. Now, maybe you're wrong, and that'll come out of it. So be meek at the same time, because maybe that other person wants healing or needs healing, and you could be the only one that could bring it to them. So don't be stupid about this stuff. Don't think that you're all right and they're all wrong. Okay? But let's go black and white, at least to shut down most of the abuse. I don't want you being abused. But I don't want you to be an abuser either. That's two-way street. I don't want you to be an abuser. And I don't want you being abused. Okay? You understand? Gosh, you just got to drive this thing home. Well, here's old David, what he say, verse 29, and David said, well, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? No, there's no reason for him to say that stuff. And he just dropped it. I loved it. What did David do? He stayed focused on what God was doing within his heart. And now you've got the rear guard attack, the rear, coming up from the rear. Verse 31, and when the words were heard which David spake, let me read those real quick. Yeah, okay, we read them. They rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. Saul's the king. Now the word's getting back to Saul. That's amazing how that even happened, but it did. God made it happen. David's battle cry didn't sound like a battle cry to anyone else. Perhaps neither will yours when you go to battle to beat your Goliath down. Verse 32, and David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. I just love that. I just love that. This is how you can prove whether something's counterfeit or not. Now we know that God was present. A true disciple of Christ, here's a parallel, one working for the one true God, will always be prepared to dispel fear. Because the ultimate goal of the Christian walk at this time is to live the more than abundant life. And you can't live it with fear. And so if I'm coming to you, first thing I want to do is get your fear gone. You can't have fear in this abundance. Not in the same body. Fear is the one thing that cripples spirituality. If you want to be a spiritual person, you can't have fear. You know, you might look at me and go, gosh, Jerry, you look like you don't have fear, but man, I don't know if you know me or not. I got so much fear, I don't think I'm ever going to get rid of it. Well, that's not true. You can get rid of any fear you want. You just got to deal with it. If that's your Goliath, beat it down. If that's your Goliath, take the weaver's beam out of its hand and beat it with it. But learn to do it. Don't you just sit there frozen. And don't you come up with excuses and say, I can't do it. I'm not big enough. I've had this for so long, Jerry, you don't understand. Well, yeah, you might have had it for so long, but that's not the point. The point is learn to beat it down, kill it. You got to get serious about things in your own personal life so that you can live the more than abundant one. That should always be your goal. Anytime that Goliath comes knocking at your door, you say, nope, I'm interested in the more than abundant life and I don't think you're selling it. So I'm not buying anything from you. And if you don't leave, I'm calling the police. And that means you've done the best you can do spiritually, then you can get some help. But you've got to do it first. So this is what I call the rear guard attack. Verse 33, and Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. Ah, you're just a youth. You're just a kid. And he a man of war from his youth. Come on, man. What's wrong with you? You can't do anything about this. This is the way you're supposed to be. You were born this way. You can't do anything about your problems. You were born that way. That's a lie. Nobody's born that way. You decide how you're going to be. You choose how you're going to be. And you choose what you're going to change. It's always a choice. I'm going to keep this. I'm going to get rid of this. I'm going to keep this. I'm going to get rid of this. I'm going to keep this. Oh, that one's definitely going. You got to get like that. Nothing wrong with that either. It's wrong if you don't do that. It's really something. Oh, Saul, doesn't it look of value? Saul struck at David according to his life's focus. What was Saul's life focus? Well, obviously, a sense, knowledge, walk. How tall are you? How old are you? What do you look like? That's all five senses stuff. Don't you do the same. It'll take you down. Verse 34. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep. And there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. Imagine going camping and a lion comes up and takes your food, or if you're a shepherd, takes your sheep. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, you know, you can knock your Goliath all around. You can have fun in there, okay? You just knock it all around. You think you're doing okay. Hey, I pushed him back a little bit. Good. Oh, here he comes again. Oh, let me give him another smack. Pushed him back a little bit again. Eh, I'm not doing too bad. There he comes again. You know, and you can just do this all day long if you want. But that's not going to take care of your problem. No, you got to be willing. You've got to be willing to give it the death blow. You've got to commit murder against your enemy, your Goliath. Okay? So if you've got something coming at you, you have to be willing to get rid of it. Now, I'm not talking about people. I'm talking about this stuff inside your mind that creeps up. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Yeah, I can't even imagine that. I just can't. But he did. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. Folks, it's okay to defend yourself in this situation by giving an answer of truth in the face of accusation. But your words may seem small. That's okay. That doesn't matter. Remember what I said about the creative power that you're breathe words have? Well, God gave you that. He said, let there be light, and there was light. He told you to go say unto the mountain, and you do it. Just do it. Okay? Don't just rely on your words to stop an attack or accusation. That may not be where the power is, although it could be. Verse 37. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. Well, he finally acquiesced. Nobody else was standing up to do it. Get to the point where you stop talking and start acting. That's the point. David let him talk enough. He was going to go do it whether Saul said it or not. Okay? I'm sure of that. I'm convinced of that. And you got to be willing to do whatever it takes to get your Goliath beaten down. Well, this is exactly what David did. Bring one phase to a close deliberately and then start the next. When you're dealing with your Goliath, get your facts, understand what you're up against, talk to somebody if you need help, then draw to a close. Then the next step is take care of it. Like, for instance, if you're being abused, you got to realize that you're being abused first, right? Okay, get your facts. Yep, I believe this is abuse. Uh-huh. Yeah, oh, I do feel like crap for the next week. Uh-huh, yep. Yeah. I'm convinced that I'm being abused. Okay. Once you figure it out, bring it to a close. Quit staying in the information gathering stage. Get out of it. You've done your work. Next stage, deal with it. Next time that abuser comes your way, you turn around. It won't be expecting it, I guarantee you. You turn around and you look it right in the eye and say, you're abusing me. You stop it now. And they'll rear up. The bear came back. Stop one stage and start the next. Quit talking and start acting. While others are messing around in confusion or with a lack of direction, don't you be. You might have to do this in front of people even. You know. Now, I'm not saying in front of a meeting, but you can do it after a meeting if it's at work. At school, if it's a crowd of people, it might be appropriate to do it right then and there. I don't know. You feel it out. You'll know. But those people around you, they don't have any direction, and you're going to rise up as one that has direction and be that way. It's okay. Be certain where you're headed and get there, no matter what others are doing. Verse 38, and Saul armed David with his armor, and he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also, he armed him with a coat of mail. Well, this is still Saul's sense knowledge trying to rule. But David didn't fall for it. Verse 39, and David girded his sword upon his armor, and he tried to go, essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I can't go with this stuff. I haven't ever used it. I've never tried this stuff out. And David took him off. He put him off. Use what you've proven. Now, you ought to be proving something. If you have a strong prayer life, use it. If you know how to use the name of Jesus Christ to cast out spirits, use it. It doesn't even say cast out really there. It says to discern, use it. Use what you've proven and take the time to prove the tools that you need. Don't ever go to the battle unprepared. Based on emotion. Don't just run into something and all of a sudden you're caught with your pants down. Take the time to collect the tools that you've proved and be ready to use them. Get prepared. Take the time. Work the word. Understand what God has given you and what abilities that you have. And then here is the trusting God phase. Okay? The five smooth stones. Verse 40. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him five smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a script. and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. He got five little stones, smooth stones, out of the brook, the water. He put them in his bag, in a script, and something else, and he drew near to the Philistine. He had his sling in his hand, but it wasn't even loaded yet. He was not afraid. You know, you can imagine if some guy had to do this today, you know, he'd have all his guns all loaded already and cocked it, ready to go. David just had his stones in his bag. And he had the sling in his hand. It wasn't even loaded. And he drew near to the Philistine. Quite honestly, David only needed one stone. But as his manner was, he listened to God and took five. Always listen to God. And take what he tells you to take when you enter battle. He'll prepare you. You'll know. You'll have just studied the word that applies right before then or something. Always happens like that. And so, here's a frontal attack now. Verse 41, and the Philistine came on and drew near unto David, and the men that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. For he was but a kid, a youth, and ruddy and of a fair countenance. He's just a cute little kid. You know, ruddy means like a little suntan on the complexion and a fair countenance. He just looked peaceful and happy, just like a kid, a youth. God gave us insight into the enemy's head, and this is what I like. You are seeing what God put in Goliath's head. You know, nobody had come up against Goliath. And if somebody did come up against Goliath, you would think that Goliath would, well, okay, I might die here, you know, even though it looks the way I still might die, but you don't see any of that. You just see this stuff here, you know. He disdained him for one thing. I think God does that kind of stuff. Blinds people. For he was but a youth and ruddy of a fair countenance. He disdained him. God gives us insight into the enemy's head. That is such an important thing to understand. God will give you information that you need when you got to deal with Goliath. And God will make the enemy see you in a certain way so that you can win. This is the beauty of it. If you decide to rear up against spiritual stuff that's bugging you, God will do something too. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. The enemy will speak according to what God puts into his head, but the devil and the enemy will also speak. God told the enemy that David was a dog, completely unarmed. He was greatly insulted. This put the enemy off guard, and we know this by the cursing. Finally, the enemy's anger took over, and this sealed his doom. Verse 45, then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts and the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defiled. This day will the Lord deliver me into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcass of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give it into our hands. David spoke with the wisdom of God. He took all the devil's rhetoric and turned it around spiritually. Verse 48, and it came to pass, when the Philistines arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Oh, I love this. He hasted. And he ran toward the Philistines. What would you do? What do you do with your Goliath? You just kind of lumber along, frozen, fearful. It's time to change that. You need to run. Run to that army that's bothering you. Never be afraid of what you have to deal with. Just stop being afraid. Just stop it. Do it, okay? Absolutely stop it. Whatever you have to deal with is never bigger than God. Never. Trust me. No matter what it is you have in your life that's trying to beat you down, you can always beat it down because you've got God, and nothing is ever bigger than God. You must have this mindset if you're ever going to beat down your Goliath. Verse 49. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it. And smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. Quite interesting. Some translations say that it hit his knee right in here, which is what then made him fall forward. I don't know which one it is. We'll find out one day. You do not need your tools of warfare until it's time to use them. That's what's pretty cool. Even though they're available at any time, reach for your weapon when you need it, but not before. In other words, don't worry about your preparedness as long as you are prepared. Don't worry about it. He reached into his bag after he'd been standing there when it was time. Verse 50, so David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him, but there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran and stood upon the Philistine. Imagine you doing this to your Goliath. You knock it down. You've knocked it down many times. You're here today. Okay? You have dealt in part with your Goliath. You've knocked it down. And you do a good job of knocking it around, okay? But here's the step you need to do. After it's down, look what David did. He ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword, the Philistine's sword, and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. I guarantee you that when you put your giant, your Goliath, into the grave, the other enemies that came along with it will also flee. If you learn to take a stand against the very things that abuse your spirituality, the rest of the stuff will leave. That's what the word promises. It always happens that way. Learn to behead your Goliath. Do it. Put it in the grave. And anything else that was hanging around with it, and there's other stuff, trust me, there, it will also flee. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until they come to the valley, to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Sharam, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. They went right back to where those creeps came from. Well, all David had was five small stones. That's it. And he defeated his enemy with one. That's all you need is one attack. If you decide that you're going to put that thing in the grave, and I trust you do, I trust you never breathe one more breath of life into it. I trust that you never recreate it again. I trust that you put it in the grave. And all you need is that one fatal blow. Just ask God for that one fatal blow. Just ask God. God, I'm putting this Goliath in the grave. I want to give it the one final blow. Well, David defeated his enemy with one small stone. And that's all you will ever need, one small stone. But hasn't God given you nine? Don't you have nine enormous rocks You've got all nine manifestations of Holy Spirit, speaking in tongues, tongues with interpretation, prophecy, word of knowledge, word of wisdom, discerning of spirits, faith, which is believing, miracles, which is the manifestation of power. I don't like the word miracles at all, really, but it gives you a good feeling, and gifts of healing. Okay? All nine. You never have a reason to lose. The only reason you're in a losing situation right now, if you are, is because you don't use what you've got. You don't take the stand. You never have a reason to lose. And you must have a mindset, I must always win. I must always win. You see, the whole world's designed to beat that out of you because they want you to think that everybody's the same out there. They do this in school. They don't even let you have championships anymore so that one person is the great winner, you know. None of that stuff. Everybody's got to be the same. Everybody's got to be given the same opportunity, same chance, and all that nonsense. That's just not biblical. It's not the way the word is written. There are winners and there are losers. It's okay. Quit thinking that, you know, you're just the same as the next guy. If you think you're the same as the next guy, and you know you do if you don't stand up and fight for things that are abusing you, you're wrong. You need to change. You never have a reason to lose. You must always win spiritually. That's how it's got to be. Why not? You're a winner anyway. You're already seated in the heavenlies anyway. Why not change the way you think? Make a change. Don't just sit around and let stuff happen to you. Take the time to analyze, to realize, and then to formalize your attack. Beat your Goliath down. Beat him down. When you walk out of the house tomorrow to work or wherever you go to school, you walk out on cloud 9, 10, 11, and 12. You walk out high, happy, blessed. You know, your situation could be as simple as learning to be nice. I know that sounds ridiculous, but maybe you're mean all the time. Maybe you're mad all the time. And that's usually the problem that people have. I'll just be real honest with you. We have an angry society today. You guys have to deal with anger whether you like it or not. Your friends just pop up and they're mad. Okay? You drive down the road, you got angry drivers. You go to work, you got angry boss and angry workers. You go to school and your kid friends are angry. You pick up the phone and call a friend and your friend's angry. Your family, your relatives are angry. Everybody's angry today. And doggone it, it's an epidemic. Maybe your biggest challenge is learning how to be nice. Maybe you've got everything under control. Maybe you're doing great, but maybe the anger comes up, okay? That would be potentially your greatest enemy. And I think your greatest enemy emotionally, spiritually, would be envy. Because envy breeds jealousy. Anger breeds hate. If you've been abused, and then you have pain, and then the pain finally goes away because the abuse stopped, but then you just have hurt left. But if you have to deal with situations with hurt, and especially if that person or abuser comes back on the scene, it typically develops into hate, where you hate that person. You hate being around that situation. You hate having to talk to the person. You hate having to help the person. You hate having to do anything with the person. That's how you know it's abuse. But tomorrow I want you to walk out without that. I want you to walk out on cloud 9, 10, 11, and 12. I want you to be high in the heavenlies. Something's got to change if that's going to happen. And maybe all you need to do is be nice. So maybe your strategy would be, I'm just going to change. And so then when the abuse comes up, all the anger, it's like you have this whole glass dome around you that nothing can penetrate. You're completely in your nice dome, your dome of niceness. Okay, and you're going to be happy, you're going to be beautiful, you're going to smile, you're going to be good. Maybe that's all you need. Maybe the anger from the world is what's beating you down so much. That's a big one. Maybe you're sick of the anger of the world. Everywhere you go, people are grumpy, mad, all that stuff. You put a stop to it in your life and just be happy. Smile at them. But you must always win. The answer is not in your tool chest. It's in your mindset and attitude. I guarantee you. Spiritually, you're a winner. Spiritually, you've been given it all. But your biggest battle is going to be right here in your brain. Right here. What's your attitude? Why not be happy? You know, I look at pictures. You look at pictures, you have five or six people, if there's six, you got five with a smile and one without a smile. Now why? Because that person's got a problem. They can say that they don't, but they do. Because you ought to manifest Christ. You ought to radiate Christ. You ought to be the perfect example of Christ. Now Christ would not run around gloomy. Our society turns blessings into gloom. Its whole design is to bring gloom upon a person. It's time for that to stop. It really is. I want you to be a happy person. I want you to be a wholesome person mentally. But you got to do that. What do you want to change? Well, I'm kind of tired of being upset. Okay, stop being upset. Just start doing things that make you not upset. It's in your mindset and attitude, folks. Beat down your Goliath with the tools God has given you. But learn to harness what you have within your heart and mind, too. Thank you.